Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The golden age of Mexican cinema spanned a quarter century from the 1930s to the 1950s. Films like Luis Buñuel's Los Olvidados and Emilio Fernandez's María Candelaria shaped Mexican identity in a variety of genres. The stars that grew out of this golden age included María Félix and Pedro Infante. One of the many genres in this Mexican cinematic boom was the rumbera, films rich with Afro-Caribbean beats, whose protagonists are long-suffering women of loose morals who bravely face the exploitations of society and cut a mean rug. The 1951 film Víctimas del Pecado, Victims of Sin, was directed by famed Mexican director Emilio Fernandez. It's a blend of noir, melodrama, and musical. Ninon Sevilla stars as the protagonist Violeta, a nightclub dancer who rescues an abandoned infant and tries to protect him from his gangster father, who also happens to be Violeta's pimp. To talk about Victims of Sin is musicologist Dr. Jacqueline Avila with the University of Texas at Austin Butler School of Music. She's the author of Cine Sonidos, Film Music and National Identity in Mexico's Época de Oro. She was interviewed by Texas Public Radio's resident cinephile, Nathan Cohn.
Let me first ask you, Dr. Avila, Victims of Sin is a terrific movie. It's full of fascinating characters. Our lead is Violeta, played by Ninon Sevilla, who's a strong woman, and we'll talk about her as a specific character in just a moment. But the film itself is an evolution of what's been called the prostitute melodrama, as you write in your essay on the film. It's a common theme in Mexican cinema from the early part of the 20th century, and you write in your essay about how sex workers in Mexican popular culture were depicted as figures of desire and sympathy, which fascinates me because Mexico's population is very Catholic and has been for quite some time. So by opening up our conversation, I was wondering if you might talk to me a little bit about this dichotomy of this character archetype in Mexican cinema.
Yeah, you know, it was really fascinating to do research on this particular film genre because it is so controversial and so popular at the same time. And talking about something like sex work is known as, you know, the world's oldest occupation. I mean, that was something that was brought up in literature and also in paintings for quite a long time. So when Mexican cinema, especially in the 30s, started focusing on the prostitute melodrama, they did so with the film Santa. That was the first film that really promoted this genre with synchronized sound. Now, there's a silent version of the film that occurs a few years later, or earlier rather, but this one had sound attached to it and it became such a sensation. And it was based off of Federico Gamboa's 1903 novel, Santa, which is basically a fallen woman narrative. It's a young woman who is seduced. Yeah, she's from a small town and she is seduced by a man and eventually left, and her family disowns her for that, so they kick her out of her home, and she ventures to the nearest metropolitan area, which in this case was Mexico City, and there she becomes absorbed into the bordello culture, becomes a very popular sex worker in the area. And so as the story goes on, she moves from individual to individual, and she develops a relationship with the blind pianist Polito, and they create a really nice friendship. But he's basically in love with her and will do anything for her. But it all ends up in her death. And that seems to be the model that is recycled during the 1930s in Mexican film. This fallen woman narrative that ends with death. It happens again later in 1933 with La Mujer de Puerto, or The Woman of the Port. And then it happens in other films moving into the 1940s. So it became a very popular genre, not just because of that narrative, but also because this was a film genre that incorporated a lot of diegetic musical performance. And one of the things that really resonated with me, especially my ears, was what songs were incorporated to highlight this atmosphere and to highlight this narrative. And for Mexican film in the 30s, it was the bolero. And it was the danzón. These were the two musical genres that became fused to this sex worker, to this prostitute protagonist. The boleros were typically written by Agustin Lara, who was a very, very famous bolerista during the from the 30s and the 40s. And then the dance music was typically a danzón, Afro-Cuban dance that re-territorialized in Mexico and became quite popular. Now, when we move into the 1940s, the genre kind of changes a bit into the cabaretera, or these dance hall genres. And so the focus now moves out of the bordello and more into cabarets. And these spaces were just amazing because you have these musical numbers that are played in entirety, that has the orchestra on the scene, and you have the rumbera, or the central dancing figure, engaging with the music. And it became a big spectacle. And that's where Víctimas del Pecado comes in at the beginning of the 50s.
And you have these terrific performances in the film from Pérez Prado and his orchestra and Pedro Vargas being there for entertainment's sake. I think in this particular film, in Victims of Sin, the songs comment on the plot. I'm thinking both about Pedro Vargas's sad song where he sings, "Why did fate make you a sinner if you don't know how to sell your heart?"
¿Por qué te hizo el destino pecador? Si no sabes vender el corazón.
And also even that scene where the mariachi band that follows the character of Santiago along the railroad tracks, they're calling for the train to carry me away.
Oigan, señores, el tren que lejos me va llevando. Oigan, señores, el tren. Oigan los silbidos que Chacuando ya va caminando. Oigan los silbidos que Chacuando ya va caminando.
How closely did Emilio Fernandez plan these sequences with the performers in the case of this film particularly?
I don't know so much if it was him specifically, but it was the musical direction within that film. I mean, someone was really doing their homework and listening to what was going on. And that's a pretty common occurrence in Mexican film within its entirety. If you really, really listen to what these films are putting out there, and just those very careful, like you just pointed out, those nuances in the lyrics. And it's not just the lyrics, it's the genres that are performed too. So you have a mariachi, these kind of walking minstrels following Don Santiago, who is supposed to be he wears a sombrero. He's supposed to be this figure of masculinity to kind of offset the Rodolfo character, who's the pachuco pimp. So, there's a lot of detail that the music provides, these messages that the music provides to audiences, especially a national audience at the time, that sometimes can go unheard by anybody just watching. So it's a nice exercise to watch and listen to the film.
Jacqueline Avila is an associate professor of musicology at the University of Texas at Austin Butler School of Music. She's the author of Cine Sonidos, Film Music and National Identity in Mexico's Época de Oro. She's talking with Texas Public Radio's Nathan Cohn about the 1951 Emilio Fernandez film, Victims of Sin, Víctimas del Pecado, a classic from Mexico's golden age of cinema. The film has recently been restored and reissued by the acclaimed Criterion Collection. Still to come, a key feature of some of the films in Mexico's golden age of cinema is the music that's central to its plot.
There's music in it, but what is the music doing? There's like music is doing a very, very important work in delivering some of the messages of the narrative and also the characters and even of Mexican popular culture during the period.
The conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Director Emilio El Indio Fernandez was the son of a revolutionary soldier and a Kickapoo descendant. He rose in the Hollywood ranks from a set builder and extra to one of the top filmmakers in Mexico's golden age of cinema. His 1951 film, Víctimas del Pecado, Victims of Sin, is a classic from the Mexican golden age of cinema. It stars Ninon Sevilla, a Cuban-born dancer who took the Mexico film industry by storm. Her character, Violeta, starts her career in the middle-class club, Cabaret Chango, but her life takes a downturn when she gives up her career to raise an abandoned baby who happens to be her murderous pimp's son. To make ends meet, she gets a second chance at her career at the Máquina Loca, a grittier working-class club tucked in Mexico City's back alleys. She connects here with other marginalized and exploited people. Texas Public Radio's resident cinephile Nathan Cohn is talking today about Victims of Sin with musicologist Jacqueline Avila of the University of Texas at Austin Butler School of Music. And a warning, a spoiler is ahead.
I was very surprised to see the character of Violeta, who, just to recap briefly, begins the film as a cabaretera, a singer, and finds herself in possession of one of her fellow singers' children because, you know, the pimp has told this other woman, you need to get rid of that kid, and Violeta takes in the boy on her own. And she pushes back at male characters in the film in such a forceful manner, from the pimps to the club owners. And there's a great scene where Don Gonzalo, the owner of the club Changu, where she sings, is telling her to get rid of this baby. And, you know, she kicks him in the shin and tells him off. And I'm wondering if we can hear that scene and then ask you to comment on it.
No me da la gana de irme. Antes de irme lo voy a decir cuatro frescas que le tengo mucho tiempo que decirle. Y no me harté de la voz. Óigame lo que le voy a decir. Ojalá que haga el chango y con usted junto. Porque ya está hecha y a mí no me importa. ¿Lo oyó?
Malagradecida.
At this time in 1951, was this rare for the female character in a Mexican film to be that forward with authority, so to speak, in the character of Don Gonzalo and men in general? Or was this a new thing that was coming in as things were changing with film, as you referenced earlier?
This is such a great question. That is one of my favorite scenes. I remember watching that, watching and really, really listening to the dialogue. And I was like, oh man, this is fabulous. This is fabulous. And then when Rito Montaner takes him and like blows a raspberry at his face. And yeah, that's also pretty great. I think around this time, you start to see more of this assertiveness with a lot of the women characters, especially within the genre. I mean, they have much more agency at the end of the 40s and moving into the 50s than they did before. Definitely, they are stronger individuals than as sex worker protagonist was presented during the 1930s. And you can see that not just by the way that they present themselves around other men, but also by the way that they engage with any of the other characters on screen, the way that they dance, just this confidence that they imbue.
There's that other terrific dance scene where Violeta is having that dance with another character, a black man, as you point out in your essay too, which is very uncommon in films. And she is taking the dominant lead in the dance, so to speak. Could you describe that?
That's one of my favorite dance scenes of Ninon Sevilla's career. I just think the relationship that she has with Jimmy Monterrey, who is the bongocero in that scene, is just fabulous. And they're dancing a huanhuanco, which is a ritualized dance of like sexual conquest, where the man is supposed to pursue the woman by trying to grab at her genitals, and then she's kind of blocking him in these very choreographed moves. But in this scene, in watching closely, she's the one who's kind of making the more assertive gestures, and he's blocking her. And they have the nice interplay of kind of going back and forth in that particular dance. And I just think it's great. And I read that she just loved improvising that dance with him.
This movie is interesting to me also because as I look on Fernandez's early filmography leading up to this, I think this is one of the first movies that I am reading about and watching some of his movies that I think is really urban. It takes place in contemporary times. It's all in the city. What do you see when you look at this movie and the staging of it and its plot and the way it was shot?
You know, he did this other film, I think in the mid-40s, called Solon, Mexico, which also has that type of urban setting. And I don't remember which one I watched first, but both of them had resonated with me in terms of the way that the nightclubs were depicted. Because you have these two principal spaces that Violetta performs in. So the Club Chango, which is kind of this huge middle class nightclub with its big stage, a big orchestra, lots of neon lights and things like that. And then the La Máquina Loca, which is more for working class, near the railroad tracks, and it translates to the crazy machine. And it's, instead of being huge, like in a horizontal sense, it goes up vertically. So, and the orchestra, the musical groups are a little bit different. I mean, his films, along with, you know, the very careful eye of Gabriel Figueroa, tend to pick up on a lot of like urban detail from Mexico City. Like they really capture different environments of Mexico City, and the way that it's synthesized together makes it so not just like maybe presenting one identity, but so many different identities and so many different people kind of coalescing in these spaces. And I really liked that diversity. And with the new restoration of Víctimas del Pecado, I mean, Figueroa's cinematography is just, it's stunning. The different colors, the shadows, the angles that he captures. I don't remember seeing that in such a poignant way before.
I think it's interesting that you use the word colors, because even though this is a black and white film, there are color details within the black and white image that are so brilliantly captured by Figueroa. I'm thinking of those scenes of like the railroad yard, and there's the billowing smoke coming through there and the deep focus on that. And also the way the scenes were set up and shot, where even the abandoned baby is right in front of a, like this giant monument as well. There's a lot of symbolism in there. So
yeah, that scene too is it hits harder. I mean, it's been a few years since I've watched the whole thing in entirety, and when I saw the restored version, I was like, oh man, this is powerful. The imagery itself is so powerful, and especially that particular scene, it makes the abandonment of the child just seem so much smaller in comparison to this monument, and it's a very troubling message that sends.
Just a quick question about the actress Ninon Sevilla herself, who was a Cuban who immigrated to Mexico in the 1940s. In your research, did audiences at the time remark or care about the accents? Or was it simply established that she's a Cuban singer and this is, you know, she's performing in Mexico? I can't remember in the film if she's established as being Cuban, right? As I was watching it with another friend of mine who speaks Spanish, she was saying, oh my gosh, I can hardly understand her because of the difference in the accents between the characters who are from Mexico versus the Cuban characters.
That's really interesting. I don't think anything really came up in any of the kind of like the primary source work that I did for this film or on her in general, remarking on her accent. I think more was marked about her appearance. Mm. She was this voluptuous blonde Cuban who was performing, who was dancing in Mexican film. And I mean, she kind of, she performed at Teatro Lirico, and then she kind of got that contract with Calderon Productions. And then she was pretty much on her way, and she established herself in taking in her whole life story. She kind of established herself pretty quickly, but she was one of a few different dancers and Cuban musicians who arrived in Mexico at the end of the 40s. Pérez Prado was one, and Rito Montaner also came, and there was a few other rumberas who made a name for themselves within Mexican film. And so Mexican cinema, especially towards the end of the 40s, became this multicultural, multinational enterprise, even though it was supposed to be Mexican national cinema, but it was made up of all these different people who had immigrated into Mexico during this period. I mean, audiences loved her, and the French especially, they loved her too.
Fantastic. How big of a deal is it that a film from the golden age of Mexican cinema has finally made it into the, you know, holding up my air quotes here, esteemed Criterion collection?
I think it's major. I mean, this is a great film to enter into the collection. It is seen as one of the hallmark films of the Mexican cabaretera genre, but also of Mexican film history during the golden period. I wasn't surprised, and I was really happy, and I was ecstatic when they asked me. So I had worked with this film for so long, and she's on the cover of my book. Her dance sequences were one of the first things that I wrote about when writing about music in Mexican film. I just think it was such a great move on Criterion's part, and I hope they do more films I have ideas. So if they want to know, they could ask me.
What's your favorite thing about revisiting these Golden Age films? What do you like most about watching them?
Oh, there's so many things. Watching them kind of takes me back to where I was when I first started doing this research. I mean, I grew up in Southern California, and I used to watch these movies with my dad. And I didn't speak Spanish at the time, and he would explain things to me and trying to understand what was going on screen. And then being able to take those memories and then kind of readjust when I start watching and listening to these films with an academic eye and ear, with a little more criticism attached. And what I really love is how engaged they are with music, just how musical these movies are. And I mean, I've tried to highlight this in a lot of my work, but it doesn't get mentioned as much as how music, like there's music in it, but what is the music doing? There's like music is doing a very, very important work in delivering some of the messages of the narrative and also the characters and even of Mexican popular culture during the period. And it's something that I hope people take more interest in the future. And with pieces like this, like with the collections like this, where they want to have someone talk about the music at the same time, I think that that's going to open more doors to not just watching these films with a critical eye, but also like listening to these films with a critical ear.
Is there anything that we didn't talk about today that you'd like to highlight at all?
The ending was pretty odd.
It's a happy ending, which is when I'm telling people to watch movies from this era and specifically from here, I'm like, hey, guess what, folks?
Especially in the 30s, where it was all dramatic and the women died in these very horrible ways. Like they would die on the operating table or they would take their own life or... it's like Italian opera during the 19th century. It's like tuberculosis or things like that. Yeah, it was just kind of like, okay, we know this trope, but now you have Victimas del Pecado and she's in prison for killing the Pachuco pimp who's been attacking her at every turn. And then she's exonerated. She's liberated at the end. And I remember thinking the first time I saw it, like almost 20 years ago, I'm like, oh, that's different. It has like since kind of sat with me for a while on this particular ending of whether that would be possible.
That's Dr. Jacqueline Avila, Associate Professor of Musicology at the University of Texas at Austin Butler School of Music. She's the author of Cines Sonidos, Film Music and National Identity in Mexico's Época de Oro. She was talking to Texas Public Radio's Nathan Cohn about the 1951 Emilio Fernandez film Víctimas del Pecado, Victims of Sin. This classic rumbera for Mexico's golden age of cinema has received the Criterion treatment. The Criterion collection takes classic and contemporary films and releases them with state-of-the-art restorations and special features. Victims of Sin is available on the Criterion collection on DVD and Blu-ray. The Blu-ray features a number of extras, including numerous interviews, an archival documentary on rumberas that features an interview with Ninon Sevilla, and an essay by today's guest, Jacqueline Avila. Victims of Sin will be screened as part of TPR's Cinema Tuesdays, Texas Public Radio's weekly summer film series hosted by Nathan Cohn. Catch the subtitled screening if you're in town Tuesday, July 30th at 7:30 p.m. at the Santikos Northwest Theater in San Antonio. Admission is by donation with proceeds benefiting TPR. Find reservation information at tpr.org. Today's show closes with some music from the film. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Special thanks to Nathan Cohn. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
La coca leca, la alegre tamborera, con su dulce ritmo que alegra el alma entera. En onda y alegre melodía, me paso cantando las horas nochitas.
Quiero cocaleca, dame cocaleca.
Vamos a la playa que la mar está seca.